Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host. Today, Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Today, our guest is Dr. Lucas Hart, who is the Executive Director of the Northwest Straits Commission. Welcome, Lucas.
Thanks, Aaron.
So, I've heard you called the Ocean Doctor. Exactly, where did you get that moniker from before we go into what the Straits Commission is about?
That title is actually kind of a joke from a former colleague of mine, because I'm pretty humble and I don't often use the doctor title. And she created that nameplate for me, really to just kind of poke fun. I don't actually go by that title, but I hung it on my door because I thought it was kind of funny.
Well, I thought it was funny and I thought it was very relevant. So I believe your doctoral work was in fish vertebra fishing. What was it? It had something to do with fish anatomy, I believe.
No, my doctorate actually had nothing to do with fish or the ocean. And I went to the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, where I studied neuro and cardiovascular physiology. I deliberately made a move into doing ocean work because when I was at the Medical College of Wisconsin, I had heard an interview from Dr. Jane Lubchenco, who was the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration at the time under the Obama administration. And in the interview that I heard with her, she had mentioned that they needed more people studying the oceans. And she highlighted a number of problems that sounded concerning to me. So I made a move to figure out how I could get more involved in ocean research. That's where it all started.
Well, I guess I was way off, and that's perfectly okay. So let's talk about the Northwest Straits Commission. Could you give a little background on it, its mission, the intent of the organization, why it was started? And
yeah, I'd be happy to. Back in the 1990s, there was a proposal by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to create a marine sanctuary in the Northwest Straits region of Puget Sound, which is essentially the waters in the Strait of Juan de Fuca over to Snohomish County, and then up north to the Canadian border. And there was a lot of local pushback at the time to the idea because they felt like it was a federal authority coming in and dictating how they could use their local waters. So the San Juan County Council, they developed a Marine Resources Committee. And the Marine Resources Committee was composed of multiple viewpoints and was developed to advise their local elected government on marine resource related issues in their county. So the intent was to take a local approach to marine conservation. So that happened in 1996, during the time when the marine sanctuary proposal was being discussed. And Senator Patty Murray and Representative Jack Metcalf identified the Marine Resources Committee as maybe an alternative approach to marine conservation in the Northwest Straits. And they had what was called the Murray Metcalf Commission that was evaluating alternatives to that marine sanctuary. And they recommended replicating that model across the seven counties of North Puget Sound that were bordering the marine sanctuary. So within a couple of years of that assessment, there were six additional marine resources committees founded in Jefferson, Clallam, Island, Snohomish, Skagit, and Whatcom counties. I think I got all of them. So there's a total of seven now. And in that proposal, they also recommended creating the Northwest Straits Commission as a body that could help coordinate and provide technical assistance to these marine resources committees that were doing local on-the-ground work and advising their local elected governments on marine resource-related issues. So I direct the commission that provides that assistance to marine resources committees, but we've been doing that work since 1998. I've been with the organization since 2014. And directing for the last 4 years. And the mission hasn't changed. We still focus on the local-based approach to marine conservation.
What's a good example to highlight of the work these MRCs do?
Yeah, I can give a couple of examples. One that's really close to home here. I live in Port Hadlock, Washington. And that we're in Jefferson County. We have a Marine Resources Committee here. And one of the projects that they started years ago is an eelgrass protection zone. So the intent here is to put up buoys that designate the border of an eelgrass bed in order to let boaters know where they should anchor, hopefully outside the eelgrass bed, because anchors can cause quite a bit of damage to eelgrass, and eelgrass is a very important habitat for a number of species in Puget Sound. So they put one of these up to protect a 52-acre eelgrass bed on the waterfront of Port Townsend, and it's been very successful. You can see boats anchoring right outside the protection zone during the summer, especially, for example, during Wooden Boat Festival. It's very apparent. And so the commission really noticed what a success this is. And now what we're doing is we're trying to replicate that throughout North Puget Sound. So we're working with other marine resources committees, tribes, and other partners to assess other important eelgrass beds that we want to try to protect and install these voluntary no anchor zones. We've also reached across the border to Canada, and there's a number of partners up there that are interested in this as well. And we're lucky enough to get some funding from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recently to fund the permitting for some of these. And we're in the process of doing some feasibility assessments. And then, we're hoping to get a few more of these in place in the coming years and maybe continue expansion of the project moving forward. And so that's just one example about how you can have a local entity do a really neat project, a successful project at a local scale, and then take that idea and expand it out to other localities and create sort of a regional project that covers a wide geographic region. And projects like that come up quite often. We have another one that's monitoring bull kelp, called our kelp monitoring project. And that one came about in 2014, I believe, where Marine Resources Committee members came to the commission and they said, hey, you know, we're recognizing that kelp is declining in a lot of these areas. What can we do to get involved? And so the commission partnered with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to develop a protocol for doing kayak-based kelp monitoring. Essentially, it's a protocol that allows volunteers to go out and trace the edges of kelp beds with a handheld GPS. And then we can take those maps, and we work with Department of Natural Resources and Padilla Bay National Estuary and Research Reserve to evaluate how those beds are changing over time. And it's a data set that can be coupled with similar surveys in South Sound and out on the coast and North Sound to look at the broader scale of how kelp is changing. And that project is really important, especially now, because worldwide we're seeing a lot of declines in kelp beds, and that's another really important habitat. It actually led to another project we did, writing the Kelp Conservation and Recovery Plan for Puget Sound, which was also funded by NOAA. And that was really a follow-up to the Rockfish Recovery Plan that NOAA released, I believe, in 2017. Kelp was designated as critical habitat for rockfish species. And so it became apparent pretty quickly that if we're going to recover the species, they're going to need habitat. And so that was kind of the impetus for the Kelp Conservation and Recovery Plan. And now we're coordinating with a number of partners to try to move some of the actions identified in that plan forward.
Is it too early to tell what's causing this decline? Does anybody have any ideas?
It kind of depends on where you are. Water temperature seems to be a pretty big driver. We're seeing pretty sharp declines in South Sound, where you have a little bit less or slower tidal exchange. In areas where you have more exchange, for example, where the Strait of Juan Fuca comes into Puget Sound and there's more mixed waters, it doesn't appear that there's as drastic declines. In other areas of the world, there's things like urchins. Sea urchins that can have a negative impact. They're dealing with that in California. So it really just depends on the geography. And I think there's still a lot of areas that have not been researched yet. And that's kind of the place we're at here in Puget Sound as well. We don't know what other drivers are out there For example, is shoreline development an issue? Sedimentation as a result of shoreline development could be a problem. But those are things that are still being assessed. But the two that I mentioned, urchins and water temperature, do appear to be pretty heavy impacts on kelp.
I'm just curious, what are some of the impacts and roles that are important to Puget Sound that kelp plays?
Well, one of them I sort of alluded to already is just general habitat. So I have heard that when salmon fishermen have been interviewed, oftentimes they identify the edges of kelp beds as some of the best places to fish for salmon. There's also been a couple of studies that have indicated that salmon tend to use kelp as habitat more heavily than areas that don't have kelp. There's a lot of talk right now around climate change and carbon sequestration. Marine vegetation can pull carbon, store it, so it can be a mitigator for climate change and for ocean acidification. The carbon absorption by seawater can essentially make it more acidic. And with marine vegetation, it helps pull that carbon out of the water and helps to stabilize the pH of the water. So those are a few ways that it's really important. And, you know, kelp is actually found in a lot of food too. So human consumption is something I think we probably don't hear that discussed quite as much as the other factors. It's a little bit of a tangent to the work we do, but it's, I think, an important thing to recognize.
Do you know offhand what kind of foods are made from kelp?
I believe it's in ice cream, which is one of my favorites. There's a lot of others as well, but I can't remember the chemical component. Is it? I'd be guessing. I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. But you can, if you look it up, you can find it on the ingredients labels of a number of different foods.
All I know is that I've never seen a kelp-flavored ice cream, and we probably never will. But that's interesting, huh? I understand there is some activities here in the Sound that are looking at, you know, harvesting and processing kelp for food, growing it, you know, in an aquaculture type setting. Now, what's down the road for the Northwest Trades Commission?
We have a number of things that we're really trying to grow as programs here. One of them is European invasive green crab trapping and removal. That's become an increasing problem in Puget Sound. We developed a program in partnership with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Sea Grant to trap and remove green crab in North Puget Sound. We started that work a couple of years ago up in Drayton Harbor. We're expanding that's in Whatcom County. We're expanding into Skagit County this year to do some trapping removal there, along with partners that have aquaculture facilities, shellfish aquaculture facilities, because green crab can be a threat to them as well. So that's been an interesting endeavor and concerning at the same time, just because of the rate of growth. So I imagine we're probably going to continue in that work for quite some time.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host, Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Dr. Lucas Hart, Executive Director of the Northwest Trades Commission. So to follow up on the green crab issue, what have you guys seen in Jefferson County, since that's where we're located?
We haven't focused so much in Jefferson County as of late. I know over the closest example that I can think of is Dungeness Spit in Clallam County. There's been green crab captured there, and I know that the trapping and removal efforts, to my knowledge, have been successful. They've been seeing a decline in the number of crabs trapped as a result of the work there. But in Jefferson County specifically, I don't have any direct examples.
So for our listeners, could you give us a place to go? Where would you go to get more information on green crabs and how to identify them?
Washington Sea Grant, actually. Your organization, Aaron, is one of the top experts on this, and they have a lot of public outreach materials on their website that would be really useful to anybody. That's where I would point most people to.
And I'll point them there too. So if you're listening, just go to Washington Sea Grant and you'll see the Green Crab Project and scroll down from there and you can get all the information on some of the great work that Dr. Emily Grayson and her team were doing. So let's see. I had one other question about kelp. Now, I'm sorry to go back to kelp, but you said you're seeing bigger declines in the South Sound. Have you seen any areas where it's coming back?
You know, it's pretty hard to know right now because in this topic with kelp, you get a lot of fluctuation year to year in the size of these beds. So it's difficult to know based on the data set that we have now and the time frame in which we've been assessing kelp beds, whether what we see is a natural fluctuation in coverage or is it growth or long-term decline. Now you can get some sense of the standard deviation or the normal fluctuation pattern of kelp and whether you're inside or outside those bounds, but it's really difficult to know until you have many decades of data as to whether you're seeing something that's outside the norm. I haven't heard any examples yet where a researcher has identified a bed that could be definitively said to be rebounding or coming back. I think there have been some beds off of Snohomish County that have entirely disappeared in one year and then all of a sudden come back in another year, which is pretty interesting. And it begs the question as to whether that was a normal fluctuation or was it the result of some sort of other environmental factor. Those beds tend to be really pretty small. So it could just be an artifact of the size of the bed as well. It's really hard to know. And to be honest, I'm not an expert in kelp, so I wouldn't be the one really to dive into more detail than that. But those are the things that I've read about and have heard through other Northwest Straits Commission staff. Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the other areas I wanted to touch on today is your involvement with the Olympia oyster restoration.
Yeah. Did you have a specific question or?
No, just if you could just give us a brief summary of your involvement with that and what successes you've encountered and maybe even what challenges you've encountered as well.
Yeah, it's been that's a longstanding project of the Northwest Straits Initiative that Northwest Straits Commission that actually predates me. And it's going strong still. So Skagit County was the county, I believe, that started that. Particularly in Fidalgo Bay. And there has been a lot of success at bringing the Olympia oyster back. And for those who don't know, the Olympia oyster is the only native oyster to Puget Sound. Mm-hmm. And it was nearly extirpated in the early 1900s for a number of variety of reasons. But there's been this strong effort over the years to recover that species. And so Fidalgo Bay is one of the places we've seen a lot of success. We've seen a lot of success in Discovery Bay as well. So Jefferson MRC, Marine Resources Committee, and Kala Marine Resources Committee have also been involved in this, as has Watka Marine Resources Committee. So it's one of those projects that we view as kind of a regional effort. And it's the way that it works is pretty simple on the face of it. You basically take Olympia oysters and you put them out where they're normal habitat would have been in the past, and you let them spawn and replicate over time, and then you track their growth. And that coverage has increased in a lot of places. You know, another interesting point about Olympia oysters, there's been some research done on the impact of ocean acidification to shellfish, and it can have a very negative impact on most shellfish species, but Olympia oysters is one of the species that appears to be more resilient to ocean acidification. So in the long term, what you're doing, aside from bringing back a native species, you're also creating some three-dimensional habitat, which can be beneficial to other species. And So there's multiple benefits to doing this work, and Olympia oysters, many people also like to consume them. So that's been an interesting facet of the project as well. This is another one. I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. It's been a really good partnership with Puget Sound Restoration Fund too. They do some grow out at their facilities for what's called Olympia oyster spat, which is what you place out in the field, baby Olympia oysters. And they do recovery efforts directly in the field too. And so we've been working with them for many years. And I think that's going to be a long-term partnership.
I also noticed, thank you. I noticed on your website that you have some information on the derelict gear removal program. And I understand that's mostly a Northwest Grades Foundation project.
Yeah.
Could you talk about the foundation a little bit, since it's tied to you guys so tightly?
And then absolutely.
Derelict fishing gear, that'd be great.
Yeah. So it's a little bit confusing because we have a lot of different titles. I'll give a little background on that first. There's the Northwest Straits Initiative, and that's an umbrella term that encompasses the Northwest Straits Commission, my organization, which is considered quasi-governmental. We're housed in the Department of Ecology. We're an independent commission within the Department of Ecology. Then the other piece of the initiative is the Northwest Straits Foundation. They're our nonprofit partner under the umbrella of the Northwest Straits Initiative. And then the other component of the initiative are the 7 Marine Resources Committees that I talked about. So there's 3 pieces of the initiative: the commission, the Marine Resources Committees, and the foundation. The Northwest Straits Foundation has its own director, its own board, its own staff, but we work very collaboratively together. And the derelict gear removal program was one that started at the Northwest Straits Commission in the early 2000s. And over time, it migrated over to the Northwest Straits Foundation. And one of the reasons for that was that it was just easier for them to coordinate and manage the project due to the contracting needs to remove this really heavy equipment from the water. Most of the retrievable nets, derelict nets that had been lost, had been recovered. And as that was reaching an end, they shifted over to derelict crab pots. And so that's where a lot of their focus is now. About 30% of crabbers that enter the crabbing season each year are new to crabbing. And so there's an educational component to it, updating those individuals on sustainable harvest techniques, and on top of the physical crab pot removal. And that's really important to reduce what's called ghost fishing. These lost crab pots can inadvertently catch Dungeness crab and other species, which can't be retrieved, and they end up dying in the traps.
Yeah, I understand. It's something as simple as being aware of the tides and how much rope or line you put on your crab pot, and making sure it's weighted so that when the tide does reach its height, you know, it doesn't drift the crab pot somewhere else and make it drift.
Exactly.
So you guys have an education outreach program that focuses specifically on that?
Yeah. Yep. It's called Catch More Crab is the program. And there's a lot of information on the Northwest Straits Foundation's website about that as well. You can actually see some of these materials and advertisements on ferries. If you keep your eyes open, you'll see some information there. There are pre-season crabber workshops that are held as well to educate crabbers on proper technique. And Marine Resources Committee volunteers go out directly to boat launches as well every year and talk with crabbers directly about many of the things that you just mentioned, Aaron, to help reduce the number of crab pots lost over the long term and help save crabbers some money too.
Yeah, those things are expensive. So for our listeners, if anybody wants more information on that, the Northwest Straits Commission website is nwstraits.org. So now we're going to be wrapping up here in a couple minutes. Lucas, is there anything you want to point out to our listeners that you feel you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, I think the last thing that I would just highlight, you know, everything I mentioned and many other things that I that I haven't talked about, individual projects that are happening at the Marine Resources Committee or local level throughout our region, are driven by volunteers. And that's one of the really cool things about the Northwest Straits Initiative, is that we were created to bring in individuals from many different walks of life, not just marine science professionals, individuals that might have just been interested with no formal education. And many of those people are leading just great projects. So there's an opportunity there for people to get directly involved with their local Marine Resources Committee. And I encourage people to do that. And that's really what drives our work. I'd welcome people to ask questions or follow up with me directly too.
Oh, great. Yeah, it seems like citizen science driven projects are tend to be quite successful, I understand, because volunteers have a level of involvement and excitement that you can't find anywhere else.
Absolutely. We wouldn't exist without them.
On your website, there's a box that says Sound Deek. Sound Deek with ending with a Q. What is that?
Oh, you're talking Sound IQ.
Sound IQ, okay.
Yeah, yep. So Sound IQ is a GIS-based database that we created to capture the data that Marine Resources Committees and others are collecting. Really, it's a way for us to track the status and trends of various projects and their results over time, without having to print out multiple reports and have them sit on a shelf and never be used. So it gives direct access to the information for the public and for us to track how things are going. And the kelp monitoring project that I mentioned is just one example. You can see the kelp tracings from volunteers and how they're changing over time in Sound IQ.
Are some of the voluntary non-anchoring eelgrass zones on there as well?
I don't recall if that's in there or not. So right now there's just a couple in Jefferson County that the Marine Resources Committee has led. And I don't recall if they're in there or not. If they're not, we should definitely add them. And now that you bring it up, I'm going to go and check. And I think moving forward, as we expand these, we definitely need to add them if they're not in there.
Well, Lucas, this has been very interesting, very informative. I'd like to thank you for joining us. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Q-Ich for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a good day.